here. I'd like to introduce Mr. John Hall, who is here to speak with us today. He knows a lot about the legislature. I know from reading the application, he's not a stranger to some of you. So we welcome you, and if you'd like to have a seat, I'll explain the process. The process will take approximately 40 minutes, and we're going to start with your opening statement, and then there are a series of seven questions that we ask all the applicants. Then we throw it open to questions from the council members. We do ask you if you have any questions concerning being a trustee and the role of a trustee, and then you have a 2 to 3 minute closing statement. So, welcome, and we're going to start with Marilyn Cathcart with a question.
John's opening statement.
Oh, I'm sorry. John, your opening statement.
Thank you. I thought it was rather short.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm here today because I'm the beneficiary of a great deal of wisdom and sacrifice by those who went before me. And I'm interested in this position because I would like to make a contribution to the future. And since I'm not a wealthy man, what I have to offer is my time and whatever wisdom I've acquired through 65 years of living. Nothing we do will have a more profound impact on the fortunes of our children and grandchildren than the continuing success of our educational enterprise across the board. Our forebears knew this. While I was working on a documentary about education funding almost a decade ago, I was in a one-room schoolhouse in southwestern Minnesota, and I was looking at some of the founding documents, and the first school board, one of the members signed documents with an X. They knew back then that education was important. They built, when they went into those sections of land, they built a school and a church after they built their shelter. And this is something that I think is borne out in our Constitution as well, where there really are two functions provided, chief functions for the state, and one is a uniform system of education and the other is transportation. I agree with Abraham Lincoln, who said, "I don't think that government should do anything that people can't do themselves." But I think a uniform system of education is something we need to do together. And it strikes me now, after I just finished my 41st session of the Minnesota Legislature, that we're not doing such a good job of working together on these sorts of big issues. And our common vision isn't as clear as it used to be. The focus seems to me to be too much on the here and now, and the response is to the urgent, but not necessarily to the essential, not enough long-range thinking. My overriding concern is what has happened to the funding of education, but especially higher education. In 1987, when I started as a lobbyist for the former state universities, tuition cost was 22.3% of the cost of attendance at our colleges and universities. By the time I left, in 2000, it was 32.6%, which I suppose is a sad commentary on how effective I was as a lobbyist. And then today, it's 60.3%. And this has happened on our watch, and I think we're forfeiting our state's future with short-sighted policies. I hope there's room on the Minsky board for someone who is passionate about a lot of things, including adequate funding, and who's willing to speak up about it. In addition to this passion I have for Minsky institutions, I worked for them, as you probably know, for 12 years, first for the state universities, then I became the lead lobbyist for Minsky. I think I bring the following qualities: an intimate knowledge of the Minsky system, its culture and functions, a willingness to think out of the box, to discount group thinking and conventional wisdom, a clear understanding of the appropriate role of a board member. I certainly got a chance to watch boards operate closely in 12 years, and I saw some pretty good examples of what not to do and what to do. I have a willingness to commit the time necessary to be a good trustee, and I think that I have a balanced, real-world approach to problem solving. Finally, I am a product of the Minsky system. I graduated with a political science degree from Mankato State College, as it was then called, in 1970. And I am a success story because I found work in a related field. So I am therefore a net debtor to those who made my good education possible. If recommended, I will work hard to make necessary changes to create efficiencies, but above all, I will fight to make sure that the middle class is not priced out of participation in the American dream. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Marilyn.
You've started to address this, but could you go a little deeper on your understanding of what it means to be a trustee?
Well, I think that trustee is an oversight. It's setting policy. It's not micromanaging. I witnessed situations where members of the Minsky board, a member of the Minsky board, for example, came in with a computer and had done his own runs on allocating the funds, unbeknownst to the vice chancellor for finance. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's an appropriate role of a board member. I think you have to give the people that are managing the system the authority to manage the system. And you watch them closely and make sure they adhere to the policies that are set by the board.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, the next question they've given me to ask you is kind of related to that. Past board experience kind of predicts how one will do in the future. Can you talk about some of your past board experiences on other organizations and how you think that experience would be relevant to your possible service on the Minsky board?
Well, way back in antiquity, I was on a board for an organization called Victory House. The executive director of that turned out to have some real serious deficiencies in terms of the way he was handling money. And I was the president of the board when that happened. And I was the one that went to the county, even though he was a friend of mine, and worked with the county to make sure that things got straightened out. And that person ended up spending about 6 months in the slammer. So that gave me the notion that I need to watch budget and behavior pretty closely. Since that time, I decided not to be on some boards after that for quite a while, after spending 3 days in the witness stand. But in my professional work as a lobbyist for IT&T for 7 years, I became the president of the Wisconsin Consumer Finance Association and the Colorado Consumer Finance Association. And then more recently, I've also become a member of the Washington County Historical Society Board. So I guess that...
Some transfer of skills there?
I've had some experience on board.
Yeah. Thank you. I think you've answered it very well.
Mm-hmm.
John, the next question is a two-part question. What do you see as key issues on the horizon for higher education in Minnesota and for the Minnesota State Colleges and University system in particular?
Well, you know, as I said in my opening comments, you can only do so much by creating efficiencies and cuts. I think the trend lines are bad on the level of funding in higher education, and I think that's very important. I, from my experience working at Minsky, I think that it's really important, especially at the level of the technical colleges, to have a very strong working relationship with the private sector on developing relevant programs that will prepare people for real jobs and watching the placement rates. I think that you know, any way we can increase, and this goes even to K-12, I mean, the number of people that are going into science and engineering, I think that's important. Diversity is important. I also think that there, a lot of the corporations in this state and in the nation are run by people that have liberal arts degrees, and the focus seems to be always so much on other things. But I think it's really important to preserve a very high quality liberal arts education along with everything else that we are focusing on in terms of job creation.
Thank you.
You just alluded to diversity being very important. Describe your understanding of what diversity is, and then please give us your experience working with diverse populations.
Well, I think diversity is giving everybody in America, no matter what their race, creed, or color is, an equal, you know, opportunity in society. Growing up in Bloomington, Minnesota, I didn't have much access to diversity. When they were telling these Swedish jokes on the radio on WCCO, I didn't even get those because it was so homogenized. But since that time, society has changed a great deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when working in the in Minsky, of course, it was, or in the state universities, that there was a big push by Bob Carruthers, the chancellor at that time, and Terry McTaggart, on the diversity area. The board at that time was very diverse and had some really wonderful people like Nellie Stone Johnson and Liz Bees on it. They come to mind. I don't know how exactly to answer that. I mean, I just, if you want a more diverse system in terms of the students and the faculty and the board, it seems to me it begins at you know, preschool and K-12. It has to do with your expectations, you know, the opportunity gap. From what I have read and what I know from my experience, is in no small measure a result of people not expecting, expecting enough from everybody on an equal basis. And so, mm-hmm. I also think that teacher education is important, and that's how do we get the best people coming out of our colleges to go into education, and how do we make it more diverse? What concerns me is the overall discussion for at least 20 years has been so negative about public education, and it seems we focus too much on its weaknesses, not its strengths. I've had terrific experiences with my children in the Stillwater school system. If we keep sending a negative message to K-12 about only the things they're doing wrong, it's not going to attract the kind of people we want into it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how we change that conversation, but I think that it's not a great way to lure people into the profession when there's so many oscillations in policy and there's such a negative overall message about it.
What is your vision for maximizing access to educational opportunities for students?
Well, I think that when the cost of attendance goes from 23% tuition to 60.3%, mm-hmm. we've got a problem. I think my children were lucky they graduated from college without any debt, because I made sure they didn't have it. I may have some, but they're not going to have it. I think that you're not going to have a lot of access if the current trend lines continue for the middle class. And that's why I think funding is essential. I mean, adequate funding, reversal of the trend lines.
Describe the unique challenges of a system comprised of technical, community colleges, and state universities.
Well, I can't help but smiling because I was there for the birth of the merger, and I remember the first meeting of these three systems up in Albertville at this retreat center, and you had at that time, you know, like 30-some technical colleges, 25 community colleges, and 7 state universities, and they all sat in little kind of pots by themselves, and they were not very happy about this forced marriage, and the state universities were particularly horrified because they were so outnumbered by the two-year system. So in the time I was with the system, I saw that come together a lot better. There was a tremendous amount of upheaval. There were chancellor turnovers on the average, I think, about every 18 months. It was a really difficult time, but I think that the merger was, on the whole, a good thing, because prior to that time, you'd have a community college on one side of a parking lot and a technical college on the other side coming in with bonding proposals that did not in any way coordinate or share space. You had technical colleges offering accounting courses, beginning accounting courses, and then you'd have a community college come in and compete with them. And the merger really worked well to fix that problem, and also made substantial progress in terms of the acceptance of credits from one institution to another. So I think it's an ongoing thing. Human nature is such that the tech colleges are always going to feel they're underfunded and underappreciated. The community colleges are always going to feel they're underfunded and underappreciated, and the state universities are always going to feel like they're underfunded and underappreciated. And if they all feel that sentiment with equal intensity, the board and the staff at Minsky are doing their job.
are we ready to go?
No, but if it's related to this one.
No. I thought we had come to the end of the mandated questions. I'm sorry.
No, we have one more.
Yeah.
And if I could follow up after this one with one of my own.
Sure.
I'd appreciate it. Thank you. What could be a perceived conflict of interest for you in a trustee role, and how would you handle that situation?
Well, let me just say, first of all, I don't do conflicts of interest, so I would avoid one. Because because I'm a lobbyist, I have a number of clients, none of which are higher education. If, in the course of my service on the boards, were that to be the outcome of this process, I would never take on a client, go near a client where there was some kind of financial enrichment for me. I would avoid even the hint of a conflict of interest.
And if I may, just to back up a little bit and have you expand on the previous question on the dynamics of the technical community college and state universities being under one umbrella. My mother was one of the people many years ago that actually kind of sort of lobbied for this. She taught at West St. Paul TVI at that time and felt certain credits should transfer from here to there. I think throughout the years and being involved in that system myself, one of the concerns I do have is for the technical vocational piece of it, which I do think is being underfunded just because of their dynamics of needing, equipment and more of that hands-on stuff. And if you could expand a little more on your thoughts on that, and how we can assure that their funding is in place for the needs that are a little different than the other entities.
Well, we used to have this group of people that got together on Fridays. It was management and labor and student organizations. And it was called the Higher Education Legislative Liaison, or HEL. And one of the things that was interesting is that sometimes the unions were very upset with something that management was doing, and they were you know, kind of saying, why should we go along with this request when things aren't going so well at the bargaining table? And I think what I always said was, let's get some funding into the system and then fight over where it goes. You know, right now you've got people picking over the bones, and that's just accentuating whatever feelings of inadequacy the tech colleges are having as far as funding is concerned. So it seems to me the best way to fix the problem is to reverse this really bad trend line so that there is something worthy to, you know, something worthwhile to fight over in terms of the allocation.
Yep. I appreciated your observations about the forced marriage that Mo brought about. I happen to have been somewhat involved in observing that, and I think your characterization of it is very accurate.
Thank you.
Yeah, you had three cats all looking at each other.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask your, you know, education is changing. The audience, the clientele for education is changing. What are your views on distance learning?
Well, it was interesting to just watch that develop in the years I was working there. I was really skeptical about it in the beginning. I was wondering how, you know, from my own experience, how I would ever be able to sit in a room and have somebody on a screen talking to me. But now I'm one of those people that looks at screens and takes in a tremendous amount of information. I produce content for screens in my documentary movie making business. So it seems like a great way to augment the enterprise of higher education. So I would be for it, but at the same time, I think one of the richest experiences I had in my K-12 and higher education experience are the role models that many teachers provided for me. I still have lunch every summer with my 12th grade English teacher. Mm-hmm. I'm still in touch with some of my political science professors almost 45 plus years since I graduated from high school. So it's like everything else. I think we should develop it as a complement, but I don't think you can ever get away from the contribution that is made by a great teacher that inspires a student to greater things. I don't think that comes across on a screen. That's something that happens in the classroom.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, John, what is your understanding of the role of Title IX within the Menscu system?
Well, Title IX is equal opportunity for, I believe, women, and it's not just sports, it's across the board in every area, and I would be a strong proponent of that.
Yes, Ron?
If you had a chance, which type of a subcommittee of the Board of Trustees would you choose to sit on, and what would be that committee's objective in your mind?
Well, I don't know what the current structure of the subcommittees are, but I'd always be interested primarily in, you know, how money's allocated. It seems to me that that's a key ingredient. If I'd also be interested in serving on any committee that does oversight on the legislative operation. So those are two things that would come to mind.
Thank you.
Sonia?
Okay, Don. Within the role of trustee, much attention is given to the University of Minnesota and the Menscu system. But there are greater Minnesota institutions that need equal attention outside of Twin City politics. How would you assure equitable attention to those institutions?
Well, that's where the allocation formula comes in. And, you know, There's that old refrain from a song, don't speak of love burning with fire. If you're in love, show me. And there should be adequate funding to and fair funding across the system. The difficulty, of course, is striking that balance and reaching a consensus on what that is. But certainly that's important. Why, we don't want everybody in rural Minnesota to move into the Twin Cities area. And that is that should be part of the decision making in the allocation for it.
Can you speak a little bit about the importance of partnerships and partnerships beyond the NCU system with other institutions?
Well, I think partnerships are, you know, the direction we're going in society. As money's become tighter, we're looking everywhere. I mean, counties are forming partnerships, and cities are forming partnerships, and school districts are forming partnerships. And certainly higher ed's been doing a great deal of that. And where there's a mutual benefit to both parties in some equal proportion, it's partnership should be sought out to the maximum extent possible.
Thank you.
Ron?
A number of times, John, you had mentioned that it lacks funding, and I know you've alluded to a couple different areas as you've now talked, but broad-based without solving the whole problem, could you give me kind of an example of what a funding approach would be for you?
Well,
let me give you an example. In other words, we're just not going to the legislature for 100% of everything. I've taken that you're not doing that, but
yeah, I mean, I think we've gone to the parents and the students about as much as we can. So I think we have to go somewhere else for the rest. And I think that the great things this country have accomplished have been done with some sacrifice. And I think we need to renew some kind of sacrifice to education in this state and in this country. And there's only one place to go for that, and that would, I think we have to look at the fairness of our tax system. Also, it's interesting, people talk about expenditures by committees that spend money, but the tax committee spends about, I think, 20-some billion dollars a biennium on tax benefits. And I don't think people are looking very closely at where those tax benefits are going, and they're not looking at it often enough. Maybe you could find $2 billion in antiquated tax benefits that are going to enterprises or people who don't need them as much as they did 20 years ago. So that's why I would say I'm an out-of-the-box thinker. I think we need to look in new places for revenue, but we definitely need to have more revenue in higher education. Another thing I can tell you is that when I started lobbying in 1987, I believe that the share of the state budget going to higher education was in the mid-20% range. Is it 6 or 7% now? Now, there's other factors. The population is aging. Healthcare is going out of sight, but still disconcerting number. So it's going to take revenue, and we need to be, I guess, brave and bold and look in new places and think anew how we're going to fund higher education.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Well, I'll do one more. In the era, you said big and bold, so let's get big and bold. A few years back, when the state of Minnesota was establishing educational institutions about the state, several legislators said that their goal was to have one within 35 miles of every resident. You're acquainted with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now we look, wonder the wisdom of such. But to take something away after it's once been given is pretty difficult, as a lobbyist must know.
Mm-hmm.
How would you deal with that? situation. And then again, my distance learning question. I mean, other technologies to convey content.
Well, first of all, you know, with the advent of the merger, there were at one time 57 or 58 institutions of higher learning in the Minsku system.
Yeah.
I think there are now 30.
Yeah, it's gotten 31.
Yeah. So a lot of those colleges were turned into centers already, and I think they probably realized some savings from that, although keeping a building open and maintaining it is not inexpensive. You know, distance learning is certainly a key. I don't think we can afford to have, you know, really small institutions in really isolated parts of the state anymore. So I think that what the system has done has been a wise approach. I can tell you a little anecdote that was kind of funny. When the University of Minnesota closed the campus in Waseca.
Oh.
Of course, that was a bloody battle.
Yes.
And the university ended up getting a lot of accolades from some quarters here in St. Paul for having the guts to do that. And then I was a lobbyist for the system, and there was a really strong cry for Minsku to show the same discipline because we had so many institutions. So there was a situation up in Anoka where we had a tech college that had a building that was so bad it was going to cost $40 million, and this is 20 years ago, to rehab it. And there was enough space at adjacent institutions to absorb the students, and they weren't going to have to drive that far. And so Maury Anderson, the chancellor, decided he was going to close that institution. And, of course, the legislature did not let him. And they got their $40 million for a new building. So there isn't a lot of appetite for closing buildings, closing institutions. You get right down to the university was unusually resolute in what they did. And they've got that status that they're almost constitutionally on a different basis than the Minsky system.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. One of the questions that I have is you alluded in your application about your availability, given your profession. And you probably, well, since you were there, John, I think that maybe the paperwork has increased. I can't believe it was as onerous as it is now for the trustees. This is the packet. You have 9 meetings currently scheduled. There's 2 days. Two-day meetings, and this is the packet to review, and it's a variety of material, everything from the budget to policies about Professor Emeritus. How are you going to handle the responsibilities and the very time-consuming work that a trustee needs to do?
Well, I think that's a really fair question, and I have this tendency to be very honest about things, and that's why I put that in there, anticipating this question. I thought long and hard. I mean, I've thought about doing this for years, and I thought long and hard about whether or not I'm willing to put in this kind of time, or whether I would be, not about whether I was willing, but whether I'd be able to. And I decided that I was willing to make that sacrifice and make it work. Now, there are times when Representative Detmer knows that there are times when the legislature gets intense. I do have 2 people I work with that I can hand stuff off to and would be willing to do that. But I just wanted to say that it's an intense time and there could be an occasional problem because I don't want to go forward on any kind of false pretenses. It's the nature of the beast. But I am committed, you know. I know about the packets because I don't think they're actually a whole lot thicker than they used to be. So it's like they asked President Carter 2 years into his presidency you know, what he thought of the job, and he said that it reminded him of the fellow who had been hauled in before a judge for public intoxication and starting his bed on fire. And he said, "Your Honor, I admit I was drunk, but the bed was on fire when I got in it." So I know the bed is on fire as I get into it. There's big demands in this job, and I'm willing to make the sacrifices.
Thank you very much. Since I think it's time now for your closing statement. Oh.
Any questions?
Any questions relating to the role of trustee?
I think I understand the role of a trustee pretty well. I'm interested in your timeline, when you're going to make your recommendations, how many you might make, when the governor might decide.
Well, we sure can't speak for the governor, but we do have to forward names to him. He is hoping to make appointments when the current trustee's terms are over, which is June 30, so it's a very short timeline. This is an advisory committee, and he may or may not take our advice. There are four openings, and we can recommend between two to four candidates for the open positions. Does that answer your question?
That does.
Okay. Okay. Now, if you'd like to make a closing statement.
Well, let me just say that I am sincere about what I said earlier about wanting to, you know, I'm 65 years old, been the beneficiary of a lot of wisdom and foresight and sacrifice by previous generations. I think it's time for me to give something back. And I would like to do that as a trustee on the Minsky board.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll take a short break.